The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Thank you very much, Ben. 0874100102. Give you the last word by text or by WhatsApp. And so let's start with a story. It was the lead in the Irish Daily Mail today that GAA clubs and county boards are being told by the Sports Minister, Thomas Byrne, that they must sign up to equality policy to receive state funding. They have to show written policies demonstrating equality of access is in place. In a moment, we'll be joined by Professor Orla Muldoon, Professor of Psychology at the University of Limerick, who has written on this topic previously. But first, Sinead O'Carroll, editor of thejournal.ie and playing camogie still in your native Kildare. Is this a significant issue to you, your mind, amongst GAA clubs around the country?
I laughed at that still. I am still playing on the second team now. It's a hit and miss. So most people you will ask who are playing women's sport within the GAA will say it's a total lottery. Depends on what club you're in, or it depends on what club you're going to go play a match in. Some clubs are one clubs, which mean that they've signed up to a structure that treats every member the same. Never mind if they're playing with the Ladies Gaelic Football Association or with the Camogie Association. So for my club, we're one club. And so we are what we would say is fortunate within the GAA system, because we don't have some of the same stories you'd hear, like an under 12 boys team getting preference over a senior women's team, for instance. Or, you know, some teams mightn't have access to the gym because that's a GAA gym and you're part of the ladies football team. So not everybody in the GAA has that, but certainly some people who are playing within the GAA have it. And so this is where this crackdown is coming from. And it's not new. Junior Sports Minister Thomas Byrne has been saying this since he took over, that like none of this is going to sit well under his watch if people are coming looking for funds. So it's basically a stick approach rather than a carrot approach.
OK, but what is our complicating factor in that many clubs are separate, and that the men's club may regard itself as doing a favour to the women to leave the club and leave the pitches available, given that they are separate clubs?
Yeah, so this is what you'll hear. You'll say, oh, well, the pitches and the training grounds are owned by the GAA. Therefore, if the Ladies Gaelic Football Association or the Camogie Association want them, they either get borrowed them, they get, you know, lent them, or they have to rent them. And so there would be some situations, particularly around centres of excellence, where you would hear of actual fee structures in place, so that if the Camogie Association or the LGFA are using facilities, that they actually pay for them. But that's part of the structure, and that's why we're talking about integration, because the GAA wasn't built by men for men. It was built by communities for communities. And while the structures have always been separated, the vast, vast majority of Ladies Football Association and Camogie Association members and teams played within the GAA structures. So like organizationally, like financially, they are owned by the GAA, but actually how it works on the ground, most of them have been intertwined. That's why the one club structure has worked very well when clubs have signed up to it voluntarily and said, we will work together to make this work. It has kind of gone that way. Clubs are still signing up to the one club structure, and many, many, many clubs are within that. It's the ones that are outside of that, I think, see these problems kind of come.
But Sinead,
most often.
Just before I bring in Orla, but even in the one club structure, can there be rows as to who gets the pitches and when, as to when times are made available for training during the week and for when the playing pitches are available for matches during the week and at the weekend?
Yeah, like none of these. So what Thomas Byrne wants is an equality document to make sure that they can prove, if you're going for a capital sports grant or you're going for a regional grant, that you can prove that there's equality of access across men and women and boys and girls. That's lovely on paper. In practice, there's always going to be a hierarchy. So in some clubs, that hierarchy is football over hurling. In other clubs, it will be hurling over football. And then when women come into it, sometimes it's men over women. Sometimes it's boys over girls. And then in other times, it's camogie over hurling, but those two games still might take precedence over football. So it's the when it's only based on gender is what I think the main sticking point that needs to go here. And even in one clubs, of course, that happens, because there is scarcity of pitches and the scarcity of facilities and the scarcity of dressing rooms. So it's about putting processes in place so that those kind of things can't happen. Like say in our club, when the one club structures were becoming more important as the senior teams got busier and everyone was senior, our secretary, our pitch secretaries used to just be really strict on if it's a senior game, if it's championship, it takes precedent, doesn't matter the gender. If it's an intermediate game, senior takes precedent. If it's a junior game, intermediate takes precedent. And you just follow the process to the letter and figure it out after that. But there's only so many prime training spots. There's only so many best pitches for training. So, you know, the idea of a document to help clubs put these processes in place is a good one. And if it's linked to funding, it means that people will have to do it.
Professor Orla Muldoon, Professor of Psychology at the University of Limerick, you wrote about the GAA in a piece for the Irish Times in 2020, in which you said it's institutionally misogynistic. Can you explain why you felt that way, and has that view changed in any way since?
I think the GAA is making efforts, and then in other ways it isn't. If it was making huge efforts and there was huge developments, the minister probably wouldn't feel the need to institutionalise something like this. So do I think that it's institutionally misogynistic? I think there are certainly still many, many issues. And at the time that I wrote that column, I don't think I ever wrote a column where I got so many people giving me examples of why I was right.
Now, I'm sure you were getting people getting on to you saying you were wrong as well, weren't there?
Yeah, I was. And some of the abuse I got was misogynistic.
I can imagine. I can imagine.
So is this to demonstrate my point, maybe?
Indeed. But then what sort of examples did you get even after you wrote about it? You probably learned more about what happens even beyond your own direct experience. What did you find out?
Yes, so a lot of information, and still people, when they realise that I'm the author of that piece, they still give me information. One would be men who play for county are entitled to, and the support that they receive is really, you know, off the Richter compared to what women are receiving. Sometimes even women still having to, you know, pay for their own kits. Really strange things. But, you know, other ones that are just about access to training grounds and access to good pitches. But also then people talking about their children and the very different way in which their sons and daughters are treated. And that really, I think, a lot of parents have a problem with that. And because they're trying to teach their children that that gender equality is, you know, what is the ideal, but then something very different is being enacted. And from my own point of view, I think that what I find very difficult is all of the talk about keeping women involved in sport. And then what we have is very, you know, clear messaging that I think the words that was used a minute ago was that, you know, women are fortunate, whereas men are entitled to the facilities that are on offer through Gaelic Games.
Orla, come back to me about the children, though, because I was under the impression that things were improving dramatically because of so many girls playing underage football and camogie that the input now was so large that the boys and girls were being treated equally in most progressive clubs.
Well, the fall off in women's involvement or girls' involvement in team sports during adolescence is huge. And some of that, like there are various reasons for that, but without question, there shouldn't be any communication of women being second class or in second position. And I think the way in which your other speaker spoke there, where she talked about a club where she was fortunate, there is no man that would speak about their involvement in the GAA where they wouldn't see themselves as being entitled to the equivalent as a woman.
Well, can I bring Sinead in on that some?
Yeah, the reason that I'm saying fortunate, and I laugh at myself when I say fortunate, it's like, you know, saying you're lucky if you have a nice landlord. Like, I'm aware of the irony of that. But the reason why it's fortunate in my instance is because we were a one club from the 90s before it was even a concept. It was something that was brought into our club. So we were fortunate in that we were bucking a trend. So it's not that I didn't feel entitled. It's that by nature of how the club, how the structures are, it is fortunate to be in that position where
That's
you do
right.
feel as so that's not how it should be, but that's how it is
Yes.
because of the organization structure, and we're not integrated yet, so we are three separate entities. So if people haven't worked towards this kind of structure, then these processes can't be put into place. That's where that fortunate thing comes from. It's not from
Yeah.
my internal belief that I feel fortunate that I'm not being treated in the
No.
same way as a man would be, but that's how it appears, because there are
Okay.
other clubs that are
Yeah,
much
and
worse off.
the point I'm trying to make is through the use of language, we teach our children things. And if we talk about somebody being fortunate and somebody else being entitled to something, we're communicating two very different ways of men and women engaging with sport. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay,
I'm
but
not trying
Orla,
to
I wonder,
pull Sinead up on anything.
I know, I understand that. And I wonder, though, is the GAA any worse than any other sporting organisation in the country? That if you talked about soccer or if you talked about rugby or basketball, would all of these same issues pertain? And maybe we just focus more on the GAA because it's the biggest community sports organisation in the country.
Well, I think the reason that I wrote the piece, and I still would stand by this, is that the GAA claims to be inclusive. It's the other sporting organisations that you refer to don't have in their mission statement this notion that they are a representation of Irish life, a representation of something that we all want to aspire to be a part of. So I think they kind of set themselves up in that regard, because... And I think Gaelic Games is something that very many people feel that can be a representation of Irish life. And I agree wholeheartedly with Sinead that all of these games have been created by men and women, communities of Irish people. But it is one gender that seems to hold all of the resources that accrued over the years. So perhaps, yes, it's unfair. But at the same time, unless the GAA changes its mission statement and you know, doesn't claim to be this inclusive community organisation, you know, I've never heard the IRFU or... FAI talking about being a community organisation in the same way.
Okay. Well, just to finish with you, Sinead O'Carroll, have we moved past the case where it used to be that, and this now was the way deeply sexist in the past, that the role of the women in clubs, and this is not just GAA, was to make the sandwiches and serve the tea? Have we gone past that?
Yeah, I think, again, there's a lottery element and there's a geographical element. You will, you know, and there does need to be more done to get women at the highest board level in GAA. But part of that, again, is the structures, there's three different structures, there's three different executives. So in integration, I think for me, the biggest thing that we need to get away from is this idea of integration being something costly, that's not worth it, because a lot of the stories over the last year have been around that, and B, that the GAA is the umbrella owner and the other two are going to gain access. Like, that's not in reality what's happening on the ground. On the ground, we're all using the same pitches and the same facilities, but we're using them in a two-tiered system, very similar to what Orla was just talking about there. Integration is meant to level that up. It's meant to bring everyone to an equal standing, and that's what we need to focus on.
Okay.
Not the idea that the GAA is allowing the girls to join them or allowing us access to their pitches. We built those pitches. We have fundraised for those pitches. We have made those dressing rooms the places that they are today. So they're not the spaces just for men. And I think if everyone starts to understand that, we get to a point of integration much more seamlessly.
Sinead O'Carroll, editor of the journal.ie, Professor Orla Muldoon, Professor of Psychology at University of Limerick. Thank you both very much for joining us. Robbie Keane has decided to come home from Israel, having resigned as manager of Maccabi Tel Aviv. What should we make of the time that he spent there? Does it disqualify him to be the next manager of the Ireland men's football team? We'll discuss that after the traffic with Mark Hogan.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
You've got enough on your plate. Mundane meals shouldn't be one of them. Get an endless variety of the freshest, best-tasting food from award-winning chefs delivered to your door with Cook Unity, all at a fraction of the cost and time you're spending now. Cook Unity offers hundreds of meals prepared by their roster of all-star chefs. Simply choose from their innovative variety or let them surprise you. Menus are updated weekly, and new chefs are always joining the team, so you'll have fun discovering new favorites while avoiding the dreaded dinner rut. No cleanup or meal planning. Just easy and effortless meals delivered fully cooked that heat up in as little as 5 minutes. Speaking of easy, Cook Unity is flexible and commitment-free. Skip deliveries, pause, or cancel anytime. Take a load off and leave your meal prep to Cook Unity. Affordable food crafted by award-winning chefs, delivered straight to your door. Go to cookunity.com/podcast or enter code PODCAST before checkout for 50% off your first week.